2 years ago, we started something called Women Tech Makers. And the initial idea was just a gathering the night before Google I.O. of the women who are here. Because unfortunately, in the tech industry, the number of women is, of course, very low. And actually, it's gone down. In the 80s, there were 40% women in computer science. And now it's more like 15. So it really slid backwards. And so we had a gathering just to have friends in the hallway. And, you know, single-digit percentages. Out of that and that particular year, there were a bunch of things that happened that really raised our thinking about visibility of technical women and why weren't there more women at I.O. And so we started this Women Tech Makers as an actual, not only the event, but as an actual ongoing thing. We began doing video interviews on the web of all kinds of technical women. We did them in the U.S., in Mexico, in London, around just to raise the visibility and hear from these incredible entrepreneurs and technical folks within companies, CTOs, etc. Then the next year at I.O., we really focused in on what could we do around visibility during the event, because this is Google's premier event. We reach, you know, there's 6,000 people, all of the press, and then there's like a million people on live stream, sometimes more, plus all the Google developer groups who come and the leaders from all around the world and their influence. So if there's 16 million, roughly 15, 16 million programmers in the world, it means there are 2 to 3 million women programmers in the world. So where are they? So we did a session called Seven Tech Makers on Microphone, and we just put, my strategy I call Bring It. Let's not talk about women in tech, let's just bring amazing women in tech and have you see them, you know, illustrate the point. So we had amazing speakers talk about their stories and products they built. Anna Patterson, who one time dropped our cost of search by a factor of 50. Johanna Wright, who led Universal Search, led Google Instant, led the Knowledge Graph. You know, just terrific people. Diane Green, who's on our board, who is CEO. Was the CEO and founder of VMware, ran it for many years, now is on to her next startup. Originally an ocean engineer, is also a nationally ranked sailor. So just rock star people. Bring them, put them on stage. So we did a lot of that. We also made sure we did training of all Googlers presenting and all third parties presenting about unconscious bias, the things you put on your slides, and how ambient bias, the things that are around you make you feel like you belong or not. And so lots of things like that and several other, and we had our gathering again, which was fun. This year we had the gathering, but because the initiative that we did this year, we really worked on much more outreach. How could we invite the people who belonged here, find them? And so we worked through Anita Borg Institute, through Nancy Witt, through all kinds of people to just get the invites out to really great technical women, have them consider coming, and many of them did. We also did a lot of outreach academically, not only through the academic institutions, but through the new emerging academics like HackBright Academy or that, to bring the students so they'll begin a habit of coming to I.O. on a regular basis. So that worked really well. We're at 20%, up from 8.
20% women this year?
Yes.
And a vast number of them come from Southeast Asia.
People are coming from all over the place. So U.S., Southeast Asia. I was just talking to a young woman from Costa Rica, another one from Guatemala. People from everywhere. Europe. I met the Google Developer Group leader from Nepal. Wonderful. One of the things we also did this year as Women Tech Makers for International Women's Day, and the whole month, we just suggested to all the GDGs, which are organized all around the world, to have women on stage. And we successfully got more than 11,000 technical women to meet all over the world, not only in Mountain View, where we're headquartered in New York, where we have offices in those places, but also, you know, 500 women in Tunisia met, 90 women in Kashmir, sort of Pakistan, India regions met. And so just the visibility, back to this visibility point.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
You actually left me fairly speechless, which is unusual. But it does seem to be an understanding that tech is a level playing ground.
You know, tech could be a level playing ground, but we have a lot of unconscious bias that we have to come over and a lot of culture. You know, the critical thing about this work is it's not anybody's fault. Like, we have inherited the weight of history of biases and issues that surround us that we're barely aware of in some cases. The conscious bias is kind of gone. People aren't actively discriminating against each other. But if you look at history, you know, one of my favorite amazing entrepreneurs is a woman named Katherine Johnson, African-American woman, now 96. She was an astonishing mathematician, graduated from high school at 14, college at 18, took every math class, took 7 years to get a job. NASA Langley had been hiring African-American men for low-level math jobs, and they opened it to women, so she was able to apply. She joined NASA. Sputnik went up. She wanted to go to the briefing, and they said, well, women don't go to those. And she said, well, is it against the law? And they said no, so she went on, and she became the American who calculated the trajectories for Alan Shepard, for John Glenn, and for the Apollo mission. And it's an amazing story, and yet she had this, you know, she was deeply discriminated against and eventually got this job and was able to do this heroic work. Two things in that story. One is it's changed and now the biases are unconscious, but also that the history is less known as well. Back to the visibility point, that the history of women in computer science is deeply unknown and yet is a profound history. The first programmers in the United States during World War II, there was Rosie the Riveter, there was Rosie the Mathematician. At the University of Pennsylvania, there were a set of women who were calculating ballistic trajectories, these differential equations, you know, week-long calculations to help make those books for all the ballistics work. When the ENIAC was created, Eckert and Mockley went upstairs and asked some of them to join and come figure out how to program this thing. So six women joined, and they're the first modern programmers in our country. They wrote the first sort routines. They were handed the wiring diagrams and had to figure out. They felt like if the calculation they're working on takes a week, that's a good demo. So could you guys figure out how to code this up on this crazy wild machine? And they did. Now, my friend found the story by looking at photographs of them, and people told her they were models. And she said, they don't look like they're modeling. And she pursued it and was able to interview four of the six of them before they died. And so there's a new film that we announced at the Women Techmakers session last year that Kathy, this amazing ICANN lawyer and part-time historian, has made. And it's on the film festival circuit. It's called The Computers, which they were called computers, like lawyers. And it's their story. And it's a 70-year lost computer science story that we're looking forward to tell. So there's wonderful stories. I feel like it's almost like every 4 or 5 weeks I come across an astonishing computer science hero, from Bletchley Park to Ada Lovelace, the first person in the world to ever suggest the programmability of something in the 1840s, working with Charles Babbage, who did the first mechanical computer. She had this idea of algorithms, and she wrote about it. She's Lord Byron's poet math daughter. She was an astonishing person. In our annual report for Google last year, we credited her, we dedicated the report to her, and credited her with founding our industry. Amazing people. So we want these stories to be known, and we want the women who are currently here to be seen. And so Women Tech Makers really focused on that. We're doing a session later today on robotics. You know, you think of robotics, and because on children's television it's 15 to 1 or family television, 15 to 1, computer scientists, boys that you see are men to girls, you think robots, think of men engineers doing them. But we have the woman who's done the undercarriage and all the robotics for the Mars rover, all the wheels, all those systems. We have the woman who is the CTO of Nest, amazing roboticist, originally was a very talented tennis player, got injured and decided to make robots that could play tennis. That's how she got into it. And then also a woman, Gabriella, who's working on ocean drone robots to do monitoring and sensing. Originally a wildlife firefighter, just an incredible, and back to the thing of, can we have astonishing women on stage that you can see and realize, oh, women do this at an elite level.
Just an idea.
Yeah.
Why is it so amazing to people that women are doing these things?
And that they always have doing it. They've always been doing it. They are doing it. We need them on children's television so you can see in the future they will be doing it. There's a lot of bias. There's a lot of, you know, the media doesn't depict technical women very often, like an anomaly or unusual. But, and yet they've always been here. So that's part of our focus, is just this visibility so people could see these people. And then in our work for high school girls, we launched a program called The Things You Love Are Made With Code. It's at madewithcode.com. And there's 11 heroes up there, from Daniela from Pixar, who's made 11 movies, you're just an incredible filmmaker with code, to Ebony, who's on Jay-Z's album as a 17-year-old who's coded his beats, a music coder, to Lady Ada, who's doing more 3D printing and hacking and more engineering-centric, people from UNICEF Innovation Lab saving lives with code. So really seeing that code has impact, because young women, for whatever reason, only 1% of young women, high school girls, are saying they want to do computer science, despite all the products and things they're exposed to. They don't see themselves as doing it. They've got stereotypes. And so we've got to show them that the things they love are made with code, and that people, women, make this stuff. And you guys could impact the world at the level that you want to by using code just as much as founding a nonprofit or joining government or other things. And we want that breadth of skill in our young women as much as in our young men. There's 1.4 million jobs that'll be open in the next 5 years, and only 400,000 Americans to fill them. So we're going to need a lot more people in if we're going to be able to afford the opportunity of our country.
So that goes into deep into education, where Google is also playing a major role. Has that had a good uptake, the idea of Google Play for Education and the ability of schools to be able to turn to Google for help, for inspiration, for access to technology?
I think, you know, we amongst many players, you know, there's many different technology players, but we're definitely trying to make sure we have some great products available. Especially, there's so many master teachers out there. Can we get them things like Google Apps and YouTube and other platforms so that they can make this stuff to share, to flip the classrooms? It's no longer the best way to teach. We're pretty clear that lecturing at children is not great. And the best teachers have changed their classroom and they're doing project-based learning. And they're using video for the lecture part and letting kids fast forward and that. And then having the homework done at school, so you're interacting with your classmates and doing projects and collaboration. We want to use our tools and our platforms to enable these master teachers to do their thing. Chromebooks and having kids have access to the kind of stuff we all have at work, why shouldn't their school look that way? In a lot of ways, if you went to the Victorian era and you brought people from that time into different professions and they experienced them, many people would be confused. But the teachers of the Victorian times, if they came to our schools, would not find themselves in an unusual setting. And we've learned a lot about learning since then. And so we need to evolve our learning cultures and focus in on and helping these kids. So I'm very excited. I think we're seeing the cracks in the dam on wonderful innovations in education, from the beginnings of Khan Academy and these ideas of MOOCs and flipping the classroom to much more hands-on things. Some is in the cloud and some is physically at your school. The amazing things, when we get the Google Science for Kids, the level of science, I was a science for a kid. You know, I had a set of books at the downtown library working on. I was doing green energy and windmills and solar experiments. And that's what I had access to. These kids who do science fair today, teenagers, can advance the field. They use the web to find out what's going on. They are able to talk to other labs and other kids. And it's really so impressive to watch them. Any age, but just watching teenagers do that is wonderful.
Well, on a personal level, I mean, I'm older than you. And I remember when I first met you a long, long time ago, I was blown away by the fact that you'd been to MIT and you were an engineer and you had done all these things.
Mm-hmm.
Where I went to what was considered the best school in England,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't given the opportunity to do anything
right.
to do with technology.
Right.
I had a language flair, so boy, I did languages.
Right.
There was never any opportunity.
Right.
It wasn't even thought of, and you had to be able to dissect frogs in order to be able to, you know, think about a career in dentistry.
Right.
I mean, it's just,
we need to change that up. And one of the research that we did shows that not only do kids need to have heroes and understand, they need to know that women do this, and they need to have understand it has impact, so they're motivated, like, why are we doing this? And that needs to be included with whatever algorithm we're looking at. But also they need encouragement from anybody, can be from someone technical, non-technical. But this third one is to try it. In school, you get to read and write. You do languages, you do things. But we've canceled a lot of the hands-on things, shop and home ec and lab classes. And so they're just learning the history of science, what other people discover. But science is a discovery experience. You're looking for the unknown. It's the sense of wonder. And so you want kids to read and write STEAM subjects, science, technology, engineering, art, and math. You want them to participate with that. I was lucky. In my school, we had science fair mandatory for all kids. It wasn't just the kids after school or the kids who opted in. Everyone had to do it. So practice makes permanent. If you try it, you'll start to see, oh, I could do this. And it builds your confidence and it builds your understanding of what it actually is. So it's not like climbing Mount Everest to get to do these technical things. So I was lucky to do that, and it's one of the things we need to do. In England, they're starting to bring coding into the elementary school level, all schools. They're working on that. Vietnam has done it, Malaysia. We really need to do it in the United States. It's a wonderful organization started by Hadi Partovi, who's a Microsoft, former Microsoft exec and entrepreneur, called code.org. And it's really a cross-collaboration, a nonprofit that's doing a lot of work to not only help, like our Made with Code initiative, pull kids in, but also work lobbying a lot of the school boards and lobbying a lot of at the state and national level. So the code.org folks have found that in about 40 plus states, computer science is not considered a math or a science. And so we're working with the national and the state governments to make sure that people change that so that it's not an extracurricular, it can be part of their main core so that they can practice this stuff, learn computational thinking and have fun with it and make things and experience, you know, what could be a very fun, collaborative, interesting, and also high-paying career that has impact on the world and can really help everybody. Another thing I'm working on, I'm working on all this, I call it innovation access. How do we help young people, young men and women, women and girls, people from emerging markets get access to these amazing careers? I also work on innovation itself in the Google X team. And the project that I've been focused on is something that Astro Teller and I started called Solve for X, where X is what you're passionate about solving in the world. And just like we do these moonshots technologies to try to make the world radically better at Google X with our self-driving car and our other project, Project Loon, et cetera, there's lots of people in the world who have incredible ideas. And we want to try to help them in process. Before they're in history books, we'll celebrate them, of course, then. But while they're in process, a lot of people are like, what are you doing, this crazy thing? But what if somebody has climate change solutions? What if somebody has agricultural solutions, energy, bio, medical, humanitarian? We want to hear from them. And so we created a website, solveforx.com, for proposals. And people do these TED-like talks where they just pitch an amazing project that they are working on, and maybe some prototypes or some early phases of it, and they're maybe Mercury to Gemini to Apollo. What's the Mercury to the Apollo that they want to do? So really fun.
What's the URL if somebody wants to pitch you?
Solveforx.com. Just upload your moonshot proposal. We'd love to see it. And it's really about sharing it with the world and finding other people to help you and really amplifying these moonshot pioneers so that we can get these solutions going as soon as possible.
Anything else we didn't talk about you just want to talk about? I mean, you talked about some wonderful stuff.
None of us created the problems of bias that exist in the world. We inherit them. And so as you sort of wake up and start to see them, it's really important to work on debugging them. You know, they're not obvious, but as you see them, you really need to go in and fix them because we need a lot more talent on all these problems.